Bernie Sanders was the only senator to vote no for No Child Left Behind, and 20 years later, he stands by it. Eric Blank is Senator Sanders' education policy surrogate. He will be joining us for a deep dive into Bernie's Thorogood Marshall Plan for public education. Let's feel the burn and bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
From BookRiot.com, new proposed legislation in Missouri to censor public library materials. Can a small group of people change an entire public library? If HB 2044 were to pass in Missouri, this could be the new reality, wherein censors will have the power to defund libraries based on their personal beliefs regarding materials in public library collections for minors.
Huh, in Missouri.
I see a trend for me.
So the first legitimate question here is how do public libraries choose books? Right? They're
right.
Public.
Right.
They're publicly funded. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, should the public have a say in the books that go into a public library since they're publicly funded
right.
entities,
okay.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so why is this censorship if we're just saying a group of people, which I don't know. Is it censorship or not?
It's a weird question.
Okay.
And it's a weird, you know, how do you get to the answer here?
You have to dig deeper into the article to figure out and go, oh, this is being sponsored by an evangelical, largely Bible-thumping professor, part of a Bible-thumping university who turned himself legislator, who's now pushing an agenda and getting people in communities riled up about what might be considered sexually explicit material for minors.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Busted Pencils is not advocating sexually explicit material for minors through public schools.
Right.
But the question becomes the famous question of how do you know when it's porn, sexually explicit, when it's art, and who decides?
I'll know it when I see it.
I'll know it when I see it. And
right.
in this one, this bill specifically says a group of people, whoever they may be, largely I pick you, so we'll line up as team captains and I'll put together a public group. We'll be the determining body for this public library about what books go forward and what books don't. And when we put that forward, there's the new library list of books that are allowed to be bought. Okay.
So,
again, sounds slightly reasonable, maybe, possibly. However, it now starts to become, if you go to this public library, sexually explicit might be different than sexually explicit at this public library, because the people making these decisions are just people like me and you with opinions,
right.
as opposed to professional people like librarians.
Don't put them on the list. Come
okay.
on.
This is, to me, the most troubling part of this bill, is if a librarian makes a choice that goes against this committee of parents or whoever, they can be jailed and put and fined up to $5,000 or $500. But so we're going to jail librarians who make a decision about what book to put in a library. This is the censorship aspect that is frightening. However, part two of this story gets even better.
From LGBTQNation.com, Missouri Republican wants to jail librarians who allow drag queens to read books to kids. Missouri Republican Ben Baker has introduced legislation that could imprison librarians who host a drag queen story hour or allow youth to check out books on LGBTQ topics.
Wait, Missouri? Again?
Weird.
How did this happen? Didn't we just hear about Missouri wanting to ban any type of books through parents?
Missouri's been busy lately.
Actually, the stories are connected because Ben Baker, Republican from Missouri, also the lead author of this bill, which actually comes across and addresses this issue of who should be reading books again, mm-hmm. right? And so this is where maybe somebody might come across and say, yeah, that's what I'm talking about when I say that crosses the line. If a drag queen story hour, should a librarian that promotes drag queen story hour go to jail?
That's a tough consequence, isn't it? Can't you just say, hey, maybe you shouldn't do that?
Well, and
just find them and send them to jail.
Now there you are, though, saying maybe you shouldn't do that, but why not? What's the issue? What's the problem with Drag Queen Story Hour? What problem is being solved by imprisoning librarians for having this? Or even, as you said, can't you just tell them not to? Can't you just tell them, can you find them? I mean, what's wrong with LGBTQ issues? We know that the issue of homosexuality, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender has been part of the human experience as far as we can go back in time.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
people have written about it. It's in your library right now.
It's already there.
I guarantee you it's already there.
Right.
Right. So this idea then is that this bill that we talked about in the last story, though, also would impose this possibility of, okay, Drag Queen Story Hour could be a real problem. However, the other subtlety, which I think is really problematic, is that LGBTQ literature now falls under that category of which a librarian can't make the decision to put that type of literature on the shelves for people to read. That is truly troubling. That's censorship. I think the Drag Queen Story Hour actually is kind of that clickbait type of thing to make
exactly.
you go, my God, no, never. However, we don't really know the details behind the Drag Queen Story Hour.
Right.
But we do know that this bill from the last story and then putting it into here, this idea of LGBTQ, sexually explicit, and a group of certain concerned, or should we say motivated by a certain philosophy group of individuals make that call, that's censorship.
From usnews.com, National Parents Union to challenge political influence of teachers groups. Parents frustrated with the shifting political winds in K-12 education are doing what parents have been known to do for centuries. Go it alone.
Oh my.
Here
right,
they go.
Right off the bat. Okay, now if you stop reading...
Okay.
Like a lot of, you're done. And
I'm
you're
done.
Like, wow, National Parents Union.
Yep, the parents
rock
are standing
on.
Up
they're
for themselves.
They're going alone.
They're doing
they're
it.
They're rocking it. They're bringing it together like parents have always done.
Right. Standing
alone.
Up for those kids.
Except when you get actually past that sentence, please read past that sentence. However, or just keep listening here because
right.
that's why you
it's
have
easier.
Busted pencils, is that going it alone with the Walton Foundation, Democrats for Education Reform, the Eli and Edith Broad Foundation are all funding the go-it-alone parents.
They're going it alone with Walmart.
Right. You know, and one of the founders is like, look, we shop at Walmart. We shop at Walmart every day. The people that are going to be part of this group are Walmart shoppers. So we like that Walmart's stepping up and putting forth the effort and the monetary support that we need to get our parents' voices heard. Okay. Really? You need Walmart money to get your voices heard. As a teacher, I can tell you that parents who want their voices heard are always heard.
Right.
Sometimes to the point of going, ooh, maybe they shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
But there's never been a problem with parents being heard. Now, they do try to wrap this up into the story of students that don't do well, kids that aren't advocated well, particularly they throw this into the achievement gap arena where we're looking at black, brown, kids from low socioeconomic status, and that the damned teacher unions are thwarting every effort to make schools better for those children. Therefore, enter the parents who will advocate for those kids so that they get the education they need. And the Walmart people or the Walmart Foundation, the Waltons, we'll throw in the money to make that happen, okay? How much money have the Waltons put forth over the past how many years to destroy any type of union? That is the homework that you need to do because this has nothing to do with parents and empowering parents. This has everything to do with blowing up the teachers' union.
We are Busting Pencils!
He is the author of Red State Revolt, The Teacher's Strike Wave, and Working Class Politics. He is also a former high school teacher and currently a doctoral student at NYU in sociology. He has appeared on Democracy Now!, Rising, and he writes for Jacobin, The Nation, and The Guardian. He is currently the national surrogate for the Bernie Sanders campaign in education. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Eric Blank. How are you, Eric?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, first things first. Dateline, January 8th, 2020, USA Today, and I'm going to quote, Wednesday marks 18 years since signing into law of No Child Left Behind, one of the worst pieces of legislation in our nation's history. In December 2001, I voted against No Child Left Behind because it was as clear to me then as it is now that so-called school choice and high-stakes standardized testing would not improve our schools or enhance our children's ability to learn. We do not need an education system in which kids are simply taught to take tests. We need a system in which kids learn and grow in a holistic manner. End quote, Bernie Sanders. Did he mean that?
Yeah, of course he meant it. He went to written a big national editorial. Not. Yeah, I think it's really significant. It's a sign of the time, both of the real work that the Red for Ed movement has done in bringing these issues to the fore. You know, I don't think any of the candidates would be talking about this if it weren't for the really amazing work of educators all across the country to foreground issues of over-testing, underfunding, privatization, austerity. But, you know, to his credit, Bernie has come out with the strongest platform around public education, and on the piece you mentioned in particular, this standardized testing regime, which, as your listeners probably know, has just made it so hard for us as educators for years just to do our job, right? And he understands that. And I think anybody who read that op-ed really sees that this is somebody who has listened to educators and is trying to raise their demands on the national political arena.
Well, that's it. When I saw the piece and I was like, okay, I got to get Bernie. And you wrote back and said, look, you're not going to get Bernie. You're going to get me. And I'm like, okay, even better, because I would rather have Eric than Bernie. But when he wrote this piece, you know, I'm sitting there looking at this. I'm one of the original founders of United Opt Out, occupied the Department of Education under Arne Duncan. I mean, these are the things, you know, when No Child Left Behind, there were very few educators came out against this, but every politician was like, this is, you know, the gravy that's going to make our turkey taste even better. And Bernie back then was the one lone voice to say no. It's taken that long, though, for this pitch to come through. And it speaks, as you said, you know, to those of us who have been in the trenches dealing with the effects of No Child Left Behind. And even before that, the whole ed reform movement. This piece spoke, I think, to people in a way that even people who are supportive of public education, the way Bernie articulated very specifically the high-stakes testing movement, the way this undermines a quality education, and the push and the amount of wasted time and money this has created, and the demoralization, more specifically, and exodus of teachers. This is why this piece, I think, moved education reform, the discussion, in a way that it has never been before in the past. And this is why I wanted to get some comments from somebody close to the campaign. Am I overly excited, or am I right on target?
No, I think you're not the only one who's excited. The article really went viral amongst educators. You know, I'm on all of these different Facebook groups.
Right.
And just across the board, you know, people, what I saw a lot was not just Bernie people supporting it, be like, well, I saw a lot of teachers say, well, you know, I'm not so sure about Bernie. I have my questions, but this is spot on, right? Nobody, as you mentioned, has really articulated so clearly just the extent to which the standardized testing regime has been scapegoating teachers for problems they didn't create. One of the points also that was raised in the article that is just worth highlighting, if we're going to improve public education, that requires significantly more funding, but not just that. For schools, you also need to make society as a whole more equitable. And so one of the really bizarre and cruel aspects of the over-testing regime that Bernie pinpointed there is that really what you're testing is poverty, right?
Right.
The main indicator that is going to predict test scores over and over and over again is poverty, which dovetails with racial segregation in this country. And Bernie nailed that. And so I think that for those of us who are educators, what we saw in that piece was not just the consistency of Bernie, because, you know, as you mentioned, he voted against No Child Left Behind in 2001, but also the extent to which I think he has listened and the team of people in the campaign have really actively listened to educators and education activists. And that's what you saw in that op-ed, which clearly articulates, I think, the grievances that so many of us have that seems like most of the mainstream hasn't talked about.
Right. This is the first time that a politician, and on my shows and even when I do my little guest spots on TV and things, it's the first thing I point out is that when we're, whenever a politician steps up to talk about education reform, I'm like, run away, because I guarantee you they're not going to go after what is really the issue. Which even, again, standardized testing isn't the issue. It's using standardized testing to bash people, but then understanding that the results or the scores of testing are easily predicted when you look at the rates of poverty of the test takers before they even take that. So when, like you said, when Bernie comes in now, it's not just a swing at testing, because that was the other thing I saw people going, oh, God, here we go. Here comes somebody again going against testing. Look, we were all tested. Testing's good for you. It develops character and all this crap. It's like, no, it's really not about testing. It's the fact that testing is weaponized against teachers in public schools. But then also the fact is that you're not doing anything, as Bernie points out here, to deal directly with the fact that scores on standardized tests might not be where you want them to be. Well, then let's do something. And I like this where he talks about his free lunch program. Talk to me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really significant aspect of Bernie's vision and the education piece in particular, is that there's a holistic understanding of what goes into public education, right? So if you're going to have students be able to pay attention in class, be able to thrive, you're not going to be able to do that if the kids are hungry, right? So Bernie's actually proposing not only a free breakfast program, but also a free lunch program, and he's partnered with that with Ilhan Omar, Congresswoman. So the issue really at stake then, it goes back to what I was saying before, that if you're going to create the public education system we need, you have to tackle that not just with more funding. You need that. You need to tackle that not just with rolling back the punitive standardized testing regime, but you need to, at the same time, combat really the roots of the economic disparities, which is social, which you're not, the schools on their own are not going to be able to solve society's ills. And that's really one of the things that we need to push back against, that the idea that the schools on their own are the solution to poverty. No, if people don't have health care, if they don't have good jobs, there's only so much that a good school system can do. So I think that the providing of food for young children is a piece of that, and it's really reflective of the vision that underlines the platform and the vision.
Well, when you move into that and really dig, so beyond the USA Today story, which, again, thank you, Bernie, please tell him that Busted Pencils listeners too, Eric, when you get a chance. I mean, this hit home, and I had a ton of people also saying, finally, this issue. But, so now this gives people the opportunity to say, what else is Bernie talking about in education? And he's got an entire, as it's called, the Thurgood Marshall Plan. Can you hit a couple highlights there?
Yeah. So if we take the over-testing piece as one aspect of it, think about what that's connected to, right? Why are they using this punitive testing regime? Well, in part because it's a perfect justification for privatization, right? Because what you can do then is, if you use test scores as your metric to keep a school open or close it down or to punish teachers, then one of the things you can do with that is impose charter schools, right, as the presumed solution for raising test scores. And so what we've seen over the last years is just the massive expansion of charters. And one of the really exciting things about Bernie Sanders' Thurgood Marshall Plan is that it clearly calls for supporting the NAACP's proposal for a moratorium, a national moratorium on further funding for charter schools until, the depth of the impact of charters has been fully understood. So what we're looking at then is a call for a moratorium on charter schools nationally. We're looking at a lot of the demands that the Red for Ed movement and the strikes over the last few years have raised being now put to the fore. So just to go through some of them, $60,000 starting pay as a floor for educators. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a floor for per pupil spending, right? So that some of the really dramatic disparities between different school districts can be leveled out. You're talking about the free lunch and breakfast program, talking about tripling Title I funding so that the poorer districts, schools that need more resources, can get them, right? Because this is one of the cruel aspects of our public education system, right, is that it's precisely the schools that need the money the most that tend to have the least because of the way school funding is tied to income, is tied to property taxes. So all of that sort of underpinning of economic and racial segregation that it's really distorted the school system is directly challenged by Bernie's plan. So yeah, I think that, you know, there's a lot of other specific issues in there, but to my mind, those are some of the most crucial.
Yeah, and you know, the whole idea when people talk about this equitable funding, and I'm glad you hit that there, the idea that, you know, again, we're going to use, you know, property taxes as the funding mechanism, and how many people have called that out as saying, look, this is always going to, quote, set public schools, even though people have this imagination that public schools are funded equally, let alone, God forbid, they're not, and then let's move it up to funding them equitably, which would be a whole other movement in the absolute right direction. But calling for and then recognizing that, yes, the neighborhood school down the road may be funded at a disproportionate rate than a school 20 miles away, and calling to that and saying, how can you have a system of public education that's, quote, equitable when we know these disparities exist? Then throw it back to test scores and say, guess what? Every test score that we've put out there since No Child Left Behind, in fact, ever since we've been looking and measuring the NAEP scores are always tied to, as we talk about this, zip code maps. And what are zip code maps good for? Telling you who pays the highest property taxes. So I'm glad you hit this one. A little inside, though, back to the food, because food, again, people don't recognize how important that is and how many hungry students there are in schools. But I love this little part, too, the incentivizing of local food. What's that about?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up. I also feel strongly about that.
Yeah.
So the idea here is that local school districts should be able to partner with farms in the area. So instead of having to depend, for instance, on these mega corporations that are making profits off of delivering food, which, as a lot of teachers know, you know, is a really big profit-making.
It's a huge profit. It's a big profit, yeah. And on top of that, and I think you're going to go there, but it's not the best food.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, for me, it speaks to me, and that's what I was going to say, is that as a public school student just growing up in San Francisco, I just remember how gross the food was. In some ways it's a joke, but it's also indicative of just the way an under-resourced school feels and what that kind of tells children about their self-worth, right? Because if you're not giving people quality care and provision, then of course you're not going to treat school as something that you see as important, and you're really giving the message to working class students that they don't matter, right? And so if you're able to instead really make school a welcoming place with where you can get great food, great teachers, great support all across the board, then I think what you're going to see is a really different engagement of working class and poor students with the school system. So part of that is providing healthy food, and that is, you know, part of connecting education, making schools a center for community everywhere we live.
Yeah, I was thinking about, you know, the community schools movement. And when you talk about this, now it's not in the Thurgood Marshall Plan, but we think about how some of the community schools are set up where we're looking at providing wraparound services. In fact, we have one here in Wisconsin where the local sourced food is one of the major components of their, quote, community school. And, you know, it as you just said, it's this idea of also understanding that in the community and the learning that can occur from understanding where your food comes from, and then the ability of farmers and food providers to participate in the education of their local communities themselves. So it's like, it's, you know, it's this benefit that goes back and forth by being able to, again, connect all aspects of community and recognizing that when all of those aspects of community connect together, the public school system can then thrive and then get back to its democratic mission. This then moves me into, and I'm just going to highlight your part that you talked a little bit in rethinking schools, and hopefully we're going to revisit that in another interview, but you've got a great piece in with the Red State Revolt in rethinking schools. But you hit on this other component about saying the importance of these movements, and I think Bernie is behind. He's come out in favor, you know, stood with Chicago. I think even released a statement about being in solidarity with the Florida teachers yesterday who walked out. But you really hit about this in saying an understanding that if we have to have schools that do important work, and you talk about the fact in moving climate change and how climate change and the Red State Revolt and how school reform, if we were really doing it, would be connected and attacking those issues. Has Bernie made comments where he's also understanding that connection?
Yeah, definitely. I just preface it by saying on the community schools piece, before we lose that, the Thurgood Marshall Plan actually does talk specifically around community schools. It's calling to provide $5 billion in annual funding for sustainable community schools across the country. So, yeah, the community schools model is actually an integral part of the Thurgood Marshall Plan. And then onto your question, which I think is linked, the issue of climate change in education is one that is relatively new to a way a lot of people are thinking about. But I think it's going to become more and more central as we go into the 2020s, because, you know, climate change is going to infuse everything in our politics. And what's so exciting about these strikes amongst teachers is they're also dovetailing and sometimes inspiring and feeding off of the energy of climate strikes amongst students, right? So you've had a lot of students all across the country walk out to demand their right to a future. And the demands themselves are linked in a myriad of ways. One very obvious one is that their enemies are the same. Think about the reason we don't have well-funded public schools is first and foremost because billionaires and corporations have been getting tax cuts for decades. These are the same billionaires and corporations oftentimes that are fossil fuel companies that are polluting and really destroying the infrastructure, the climate all across the country. So the enemies are the same, and also the solutions are the same. The way you're going to win a massive Green New Deal is the same way you're going to win further public education funding, which is through struggle from below to make the rich pay, make the corporations pay. And furthermore, strengthening public education is in itself a green project, because education, like most public services, is a non or very, very low carbon emitting activity. And so we're going to need to transition as a society to providing much more in the way of these types of public services and moving away from the really destructive dependence on fossil fuels.
Yeah. And then, you know, as me, as an old social studies teacher, I'm just sitting here watching the past 20 years in the killing of meaningful content, and then looking at this also and saying, you know, the restoration of an equitably funded public school system set free from measuring basic numeracy literacy skills that are easily measured by rates of poverty, and then doing away with that, but then elevating schools to actually tackle problems that matter themselves. And that's the other part. And this isn't directly in, you know, Bernie's piece. It's just, for me, it's exciting when you talk about it in your Rethinking Schools piece, and I see the movement that Bernie's moving towards getting us away from you know, useless content. Now we open the door to bring in that other connection, which is how can schools themselves also be contributing to teaching the stuff they should be teaching?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you think about really the type of social transformation, the depth of the changes that are needed immediately, right? Not down the road, but right now. Then what you're talking about is that schools can be a bastion and need to become a bastion for training the engineers, for training the workers who are going to be able to create the solar infrastructure, the railroads, all of the really massive changes that we need across the board to make our society more just and more sustainable. You're not going to be able to do that if you don't have an education system that is oriented towards giving people really the practical skills, the critical thinking skills that they need to be able to engage with the world. And so, you know, so much of what the promise of education is that, you know, is that you really can engage with the real world issues and get people excited about the means through which, and students excited about the means through which they can make an impact on the world. But unfortunately, as a lot of, you know, your listeners know, that's not oftentimes what we get a chance to do as educators. You know, we've been boxed in to oftentimes very narrow curriculum. And so I would hope that given the scale of the looming crisis around climate, it can be a way of reconnecting public education with society in a way that I think will be really engaging for students all across the board.
Well, he is the author of the book Red State Revolt, The Teacher's Strike Wave and Working Class Politics. Eric Blanke's also Bernie Sanders' surrogate on the campaign, talking education. We are, at Busted Pencils, feeling the burn. But Eric, as we like to say here, thank you for busting pencils.
Thanks for having me on.
Hey, this is Tim from Rise Against here on Busted Pencils Radio.
Time now for our weekly salute to legendary historian and activist Howard Zinn. This is your moment of Zinn.
People should go where they are not supposed to go. People should go where they're not supposed to go. Say what they are not supposed to say and stay when they are told to leave.
My thanks to Bernie Sanders education policy surrogate Eric Blanke for joining me. Also, thanks to you for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe, and share this podcast. I'm Dr. Tim Slecker, reminding you to keep busting pencils, and hey, feel the burn.
Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play, and get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk, Busted Pencils Radio.